G'day, I'm Erk, and welcome to a very special episode of Erk FM Extra. Erk FM Extra is a new show on Channel Erk, which gets behind the meat and the potatoes of the artist, allows me to spend a bit of time with them, discover what makes them tick, and we can talk about anything that they have to talk about. And we have a very special guest. Say hello, special guest, and introduce yourself.
Hi guys, my name is Lee Safar and I'm a singer-songwriter based in LA from Sydney, Australia.
It's very nice to be here. Where are we exactly, Lee?
We're actually in Surrey Hills. Surrey Hills, King's Cross, Potts Point, around
Darlinghurst.
And Darlinghurst is kind of all a mishmash of areas right on the border of all of them. Yeah.
And it's been great to be able to see you because about the last year and a half you've been in LA, so it's been a bit difficult to actually physically see you, but I have been following your adventures along, and
awesome.
You do have a lot of adventures, and I have played your music here on Erk FM before.
Fantastic, thank you.
So tell us your story. How did it start about? How did you get into music in the first place?
I came to music at the beginning of my life and then took an unexpected forced kind of break, and then that I didn't think was a break, then I came back to music. I used to play the saxophone when I was a kid.
Yep.
And then I was kind of told that music was done with. It wasn't considered an acceptable career to follow by my parents, so they told me that music wasn't going to happen.
Yep.
And then, some time went past, and then I came back to music. My cultural background doesn't quite look well on women being musicians or singers particularly. So
what were they trying to get you in instead? What did they have in mind for you, and what did you end up doing in the meantime while music was sort of off limits?
I mean, essentially my family just wanted me to be happy. They wanted me to be successful. They were of the opinion that I was an intelligent girl, so I shouldn't be wasting myself on music. So I went and did a science degree in genetics.
Yep.
And tried to work in a lab and hated it, so I found my way into the corporate world.
Yep.
And eventually was a senior business analyst for IBM.
Yep.
And then music came back into my life very unexpectedly when a friend of mine who I played music with back in high school contacted me after a long time and asked me what was going on with my music.
Yep.
And it was almost as though my parents told me.
Thank you.
At the ginger beer.
Thank you. It was almost as though my parents telling me that I couldn't do music was so traumatic to me that I almost forgot that I did music.
Yeah.
So when I came back to music, it was then that I started to deal with the fact that I had been forbidden from doing it. And it was then that I started to grieve that I had not done it for so long.
So what sort of time period are we talking about you being on the musical sideline, so to speak, just to give our listeners a bit of a perspective about how long it actually was?
12 years.
12 years. So that's a long time where you...
I didn't touch an instrument.
Yep.
Like, I didn't... I went from being obsessed with music to literally the next day never touching an instrument for 12 years.
And so when you came back, what happened?
It was as though a part of me woke up again. It was like my soul woke up and started to look around in my life and went, what the fuck happened here?
Yeah.
Who made these choices?
Yeah.
And at the time I was married.
Yeah.
Had a mortgage.
Yeah.
In a corporate job.
Yeah.
Living the life. You know, I had achieved that life that everybody works their ass off to get to.
Yeah.
Ticking the boxes.
Yeah.
So, but then I woke up. And when I woke up, I didn't like what I saw.
So when you woke up, were you going in the same direction that you were when you were a child, or were you going in a different direction with the benefit of your experience and being older?
Quite honestly, I didn't know, because waking up was a massive shock. I was completely disorientated as to how I had let myself get so safe.
Yep.
The thing I love about music and loved about music when I was a kid was how much it scared me. Music puts you in, well, for me, I can only speak from my own experience. Music makes me so vulnerable because I'm so real when I do music.
Yep.
And that's terrifying for anybody. To be so raw that you can't hide behind anything is terrifying for me.
Yeah.
But I love that. Yeah. I love that I'm so me.
Yeah.
Because when I'm there, I don't give a fuck about anybody else either. Yeah. When I'm playing music, nobody else exists.
Yeah.
A lot of the time at my gigs, people are like, why don't you open your eyes when you sing? Because when I'm singing, I don't even know that there's people around me.
Yeah.
So it terrifies me, but I love that feeling at the same time.
Has the terror changed over time? Has it got easier? Has it got harder?
I care a lot less about the consequence of that terror.
Yeah.
I feel more comfortable in that terror.
Yeah.
And I've realized that I don't need to be. I used to be scared of the terror.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know whether that was normal to be scared or whether it was just me.
Yeah.
And what I realized was it's that terror that takes you beyond yourself.
Yeah.
It's what amazing music is made for.
Will there ever be a time where there'll be no terror? Or is that the time to get out?
Yeah, the second you stop addressing your fears, for an artist like me, the second I stop looking at my fears is the second for me to stop doing music.
Yeah. So for any listener who hasn't heard your music, how would you describe it at the moment? And I know there's been a big change from when I first heard you to you now.
So, we just released the first single off the new album. The single's called We Jump. And it's an electronica track. It's trance.
Yeah.
But previous to this, everything that was released, which was two EPs and two singles, you'd best describe it as a cross between Evanescence and Sarah McLachlan.
Yeah.
You know, it's rock.
Yeah.
Is the best way. The old stuff is the best way to describe that is rock. The new stuff is all going to be electronica. The whole album,
yep.
Except for two songs. Two songs on the album are going to be ballads.
Yep.
But the rest of it is going to be a mix of EDM, electronic dance music.
So what brought about this change?
When I moved to LA to make the record, I actually had no idea what I was going to create. I thought I was going to LA. I would write the album while I was there. I'd record the album as well. And then we would just see what happened next.
Yeah.
And I was meeting with producers like John Boylan. It was when I met with John Boylan that there was a big shift. He's won Grammy Awards, blah, 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 blah. Boston, yep. Linda Ronstadt.
Yeah.
You know, More Than a Feeling. Yep. He's the producer on that album.
Yep.
And so he had heard my stuff. A friend had given him my stuff, and he said, I want to meet him.
Yeah.
A year later, we were sitting in the valley in LA having pastrami sandwiches, talking about creating a record. And I really didn't know what I wanted the album to be, but I knew what I wanted it to be about. Yeah. It was going to be about me exploring my identity, learning how to let go, and learning how to have fun.
So the message is still the same, but the method's changed.
Yeah. The important thing in this new record, and the big challenge, was maintaining me in the music.
Yeah.
But everything around the typical Lee Safar vibe is different. It's the idea of, well, because what happened was I was meeting with him talking about what I wanted for the album, and I'm really excited. Like, this guy is amazing.
Yeah.
And then I was doing just a side recording with a guy who I had met through the coffee industry.
Yeah.
He was a customer of mine.
Yeah.
In the coffee shop, and he was a producer. He had produced his first trance track at 13.
Wow.
He started producing it actually at 9, but the first track he actually got on the radio, he was 13, I believe. And we had met when he was 25, 26, and he had handed me a CD. We had got to know each other at the Puff Machine. He handed me a CD a few years ago and said, oh, you know, see if you... you know, if you vibe with any of this. And it wasn't until a couple of years later, when I had come back to Australia after a trip to LA to pack up my apartment and move back,
yep,
that I had seen that he had posted a song on SoundCloud, and I said to him, I want to record that. Came back here and saw him in a cafe, just bumped into him,
yep,
and I said, I'm leaving in 3 days, I'll have a mock-up for you before I leave. And as I was setting up the session in my apartment, I noticed a track that I had just recorded a vocal to.
Yep.
So I sent him that and said, see if you can do anything with this while I'm doing Fragments, which was the song that we were working on. But the next morning we had two new songs. And I said to him, when I get to LA, I'll go into the studio and record this properly.
Yep.
So the day after I had met with John Boylan, I was doing this project.
Wow.
Which was just a little side thing for Luke,
yep.
Luke Emrose. I was in the studio and recording this, and it was the most incredible fun I'd ever had in the studio.
Yep.
It was just me and the engineer, and I was just having a ball.
So after a nice lunch, Lee, where were we?
We were talking about how I managed to find myself on the direction of doing an electronica album as opposed to another rock album. And we were... excuse me. And I think we left off at the place where I was in the studio and having fun making the little side project that I was, yes, doing with Luke. So after recording that song, I went home and it was such a blast. I couldn't even sleep.
Yeah.
And the next day I was still on cloud nine, and I got in the shower thinking, you know, getting ready to go to a meeting, thinking how amazing the process of making that song was, and I hope that whoever I choose to be the producer of my album, it was going to be as much fun as doing what I was doing with Luke, because there was not even a thought that this album was going to be anything but rock.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, you know, one of the values of the album, one of the themes of the album was learning how to have fun. And so I was hearing myself say, I hope that making the album is as much fun as doing this song with Luke. And it took me about 3 seconds to pick up the phone and call Luke and say, do you want to produce my whole album? And he's based here in Australia, in Sydney.
Yeah.
And he was blown away. He was really excited about it. I'm like, I don't know what I'm getting into here. I've never written anything for electronica, but this is the perfect way for me to explore the most important part of this album, which is finding my identity and understanding my identity. Because the way I can do that with the most amount of integrity, you know, I looked at it this way. If I make another rock album, that's going to be really safe for me.
Yeah.
But if I go into a genre that I know nothing about and still try and maintain my authenticity and create honest music and still not sell out, but still be me, then I think we're creating something really special here.
So how big of a difference is it in writing styles compared to the rock, compared to what you're doing now?
Not different at all from the writing perspective.
No. Okay.
This is done. Thank you. Thanks very much. The writing styles for everything I've done hasn't changed, and I think that's gone a long way to making sure that the music still maintains its integrity. What's different is what happens to it at the production level.
Yep.
So we were creating this album where me as the artist and Luke as the producer were in two different countries.
Yep.
And we did a lot of pre-production was a long process, because what we would do is I would write the songs, some with music, some without music. I'd write them in LA and record them and then send them to Luke. And Luke would mess around with it. And when I say record them, I'm recording them into my laptop mic, into my Mac mic.
Yep.
Luke would get them and then he would tell me what he felt from it. So a lot of the time, all he was getting was a vocal, no music. Yep. And he'd write the music under it. Excuse me, and create the track and then send it back to me and I'd be yay or nay. And so you take a typical kind of pop structure to a song and then he would then do his EDM producer thing.
Yeah.
And that's where things got different. So that was how we maintained it being, you know, me. I would still write the same way that I write.
Yeah.
But then he would take it and then he would create the structure and create the effects and create all of that and then say, this is now what the track for the song is. Now go record the real vocal.
Yeah.
Then what happened was we weren't quite happy. We'd used a couple of studios in Hollywood, some amazing studios. But we weren't getting the sound that we wanted. And so Luke built me a studio.
Wow.
He wired two preamps
himself,
built them here, and I came back here to pick up the studio and record a few songs and then went back to LA.
Cool. So what stage are you at now as we record this, the end of November 2011?
We are still in the production stage. So Luke is off in Italy celebrating his 30th birthday right now, and he's left me with a number of songs to do the vocals for while he's gone. And then when he gets back, he'll work on he'll produce those songs and give me the next bunch of songs to be recorded on.
So has that made the process harder or easier, do you think, compared to how you do it before?
I love this way. This gives you the autonomy to be able to try different things. It still gives you the space to get comfortable the way that you need to get comfortable in the studio. And I've learned a whole bunch doing this about how to use a whole bunch of different equipment.
Yeah.
And I've been able to take the time to learn different techniques with learning with you know, studio mics and things like that, and producing my own vocal.
Yeah.
And learning different things that I can do with my voice. Taking the time to be able to do that now that I've got my own studio is amazing.
So I'll ask you one of the standard IRC FM questions when it comes to songwriting. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, and assuming that you're actually asleep and you have a great idea for a song, what do you do?
You write the song. You make it. I don't care whether, I don't care where I am, what I'm doing, who I'm with. If a song happens, it always takes precedence.
So have you got some sort of recording device with you at all times, just in case?
I record a song into my phone. I'll record it wherever I am, I'll find out. Even if I, if I'm not at a, if I don't have any way of recording it on my phone, if I don't have my phone on me, I'll go to a payphone and ring my voicemail.
Hey, that's a good idea.
And sing it into my voicemail.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
There's always a way.
Because the reason I ask everyone that question is because people have got different theories of what they would do if they were in that situation. Some people have a theory as, I've got to get up straight away and I've got to record it. Other people have like, well, that's a good idea, and if I've still got that idea in the morning, well, I'll sort of go with it.
I mean, everyone's brain works different, so I can only speak for me. If I get the idea, it's important for me to record some version of the idea, even if it's just humming the hook, if it's just singing a line from the chorus. Excuse me. If I come back to it in the morning and hear it and still think it's a good idea, I either go take a shower or I start doing dishes.
Yep.
Or start cleaning or doing something like that. And that's where a lot of my songwriting happens.
Okay.
Because I think a lot. So in order for my creative process to happen, to start it, I need to be occupying myself and working on the song while I'm doing that. And then, without a doubt, I drop whatever I'm doing and go to my piano.
Yeah.
Once the idea becomes plausible, I drop whatever I'm doing and go to the piano.
So we've talked about recording in the studio. What's the difference for you between recording in a studio and having a live audience? Is there a difference?
The short answer is, well, undoubtedly yes. There's less of a difference between writing the song and being in front of a live audience. But I'm a very I'm a physical singer.
Yeah.
So I sing visually is part of what I do. Come to a live show, a lot of the emotion is in my physical expression.
Yeah.
So the challenge in the studio for me has been, particularly with this stuff, has been to translate that emotion vocally.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's so hard for me. Well, that's why it's so different for me in the studio, is because I can't translate that. You can barely move when you're recording into a microphone.
Yep.
You have to stay as still as possible so that you make sure that the vocal direction is all going the right way and everything's pretty consistent and whatnot.
Yep.
So your voice is your only way of being able to translate that emotion. And my, that's what my music is about. It's all about emotion.
Yeah. So with your new direction on your music, how does that, how has that affected your live show?
Well, we haven't done a live show. I'm sorry, everybody. I've got a cough right now, and it won't go away. It's been interesting how we've been thinking about what we'll do with regards to the live shows. We're not even sure at this stage whether we are going to do live shows, because Music Street Jam is what I'm looking at replacing touring with.
Yep.
So, you know, we don't know. We'll see how the next 12 months plays out.
So tell us about Music Street Jam.
Music Street Jam is a... it's a new music revolution for the live music scene here in Sydney, particularly, with the vision to spread it all across Australia and potentially globally. The idea behind it is that there's no stages, no mics, no egos. It's just about the music and bringing music to the community, bringing artists back to just making music. The way it kind of happened all through history, you know, in Mozart's time as well as in the 70s. People kind of went to cafes and coffee houses and things like that, and they played music.
Places like where we're at now.
exactly places like where we're at now, where it's not about poker machines and it's not about, you know, dark rooms and stages and things like that. The theory behind Music Street Jam is that, you know, we'll find a cafe that has a defined kind of idea of what they're about. You know, great product, great coffee, great food, great atmosphere. And we, you know, we tell people in the community that we're just going to have a jam here.
Yeah.
And musicians turn up and, you know, punters turn up and everyone just sits around and does music together. Somebody leads a song and everyone kind of sings along with them or claps with them or plays a guitar with them. It's a jam. And it's really about making music what music is supposed to be about.
Now, when I turned up for the very first one, there were no instruments.
No, well, there was. There was a cigar box.
Yes.
Excuse me. And this is the beautiful thing about Music Street Jam, is that it's just about the music. And, you know, when I was a kid, the way that we did music as a family, like an extended family, was we would sit around and we would clap.
Yeah.
And that's how I learnt about rhythm. It was not deliberate or anything like that, but it was that I learnt rhythm that way. And what we found at Music Street Jam was that because we didn't have any instruments, the crowd naturally created it by clapping and making it happen. And then someone grabbed a cigar box. Someone who was actually having dinner at the place grabbed a cigar box and sat and started playing. She was a drummer. She's actually a drummer. And she started playing with us. And then she started rapping. And, I mean, it just that's the beauty of it. It's a jam. It's about anything can happen.
Yeah.
And it was a great vibe. Like, you saw how much fun we all had.
Yeah. And how you've had two since. And they were totally different, you were telling me before.
Yeah. The second one that we had was more of a singer-songwriter feel, and the third one that we had was extremely hip-hop based. Hip-hop and R&B, and we had a white girl from Los Angeles rapping Aloe Black stuff, and then we had a Sydney artist who is destined for massive things, Matuse, who, he's a freestyle rapper. And you saw Matuse at the first
yes,
one.
Yes, I did.
He's incredible.
We were just throwing words at him and he was turning them into a rap.
Yeah. Matuse is extremely talented. He and I are friends, and I said to him from when I first saw him perform that I think he's the next big thing in hip-hop in Australia.
Yeah.
Absolutely, without a doubt. And Matuse is heading to New York to start his music career there. And this is the thing about Music Street Jam. It really helps. The vision for it is that we want kids that are coming through, coming to the jams, to see artists like Matuse, artists like myself, that have decided to make something of it and doing the hard work to make it happen. I don't see enough of that kind of mentorship happening here in Australia.
So how would you compare the music scene here in Sydney to LA, for instance?
There isn't any comparison.
Yeah.
The US is experiencing extremely tough times right now. I've come back to Sydney and looked at it around here and got, what fucking financial crisis? Nobody here has any concept of what it's actually like for people outside of Australia. And the artists who are being hit the most. You know, gigs are, you know, where the average gig used to cost about $20 to go to in LA, it's now down to $5.
Yep.
They just want people to come. People are making a mass exodus out of LA at the moment simply because there's no work. And
yep.
But the scene is still thriving.
Yep. Compared to Sydney, what's the Sydney scene in your opinion?
There is no real scene here. It's heartbreaking coming to Sydney and seeing that there's no real music scene. And that's the point behind Music Street Jam. You know, we've got to take the industry back into our own hands and say, you know, the venue owners decided that they were going to fuck the scene up by putting pokies in there. And I understand their reasoning behind it. I get it. They need to make more money.
Yeah.
But the onus is up to us as the people in the industry to create our own industry. The way people make money in music is so tough these days. It's why you've got people like Katy Perry still doing, you know, proactive ads and having her own perfume lines and all this kind of stuff. And the money's in the endorsements. There's not that much. There's no money in downloads anymore. Live gigs, well, unless you're at Katy Perry's level, you're not making money out of live gigs.
Yep.
Live gigs are a way to promote until you get to a level where you're selling out shows of 2,000 people.
Yep.
We have to stimulate a scene here in Sydney. And until we do that, we're not going to have a scene. And that's what Music Street Jam's about.
So that's part of the way to...
to stimulate a yep. scene. I really believe that. I think that when people... people in Sydney, the community in Sydney, don't have this natural tendency to want to go out and see live music. But because it's not something that is readily available.
No.
Whereas in LA, there's music on every night of the week. If you're looking for something to do, you're just going to go to a gig.
Yep.
Here, if people are looking for something to do, they're going to go out and have a coffee.
Yep.
They're not going to go out to live music.
Yep.
So I'm hoping that if there are any artists that are listening to this that do want to get involved in Music Street Jam, we're going to be holding them all over cafes, in cafes all over Sydney throughout 2012.
Yeah.
So, you know, head to the Facebook page, facebook.com/Music Street Jam, and like the Facebook page. It's only just gone up. And at the moment, we're holding the next jam on this Sunday, December 4th, at Coco Cabana in Parramatta. And then on the 17th of December, which is Sunday again. And then in the first week of next year, we're going to extend it up to Potts Point as well.
Okay.
And then we'll be growing it from there.
So, what have you got planned? I know you've got big plans, but what's coming up for you? You've got the album, you've got Music Street Jam, you've got your own label.
Yeah, I've got my producer, who is doing the remixes of all the songs that I release. He's now distributing through my label. There's the Dream Angel side of things. That's another aspect of my brand, which is about talking about authentic happiness. And, you know, a lot of people are stuck. How do you go from where I was, stuck in a corporate job, in a really safe life, how do you go from that to being authentic happy?
Yeah.
And Dream Angel is focused on that process.
Yeah.
So there's Music Street Jam, and there's the album. They're the three big projects over the next 5 years. I need to make a decision where I'm going to live next year. I think that I feel so strongly about the music scene in Sydney that it's possible Music Street Jam will keep me here for 12 months.
Yeah.
And I'm really committed to that, cause. So we'll see what happens with that.
So if current day Lee could go back in time and talk to previously, like when she was in her musical hibernation, her musical coma,
yeah,
what would you say? Would you have any advice with the benefit of hindsight?
I would say shit's about to get really hard, but it's going to be worth it.
And what about to any up-and-coming musicians? Have you got any advice for them?
I would say shit's about to get really hard. Don't be naive. The music industry is... excuse me. The music industry is in a very different place than what the traditional model was. And go and get yourself clued in as to what's going on. And when I say that, I don't mean go and look who's on the charts and all that kind of thing. Figure out what your path is. There is no more model. There is no traditional way of doing music anymore. Now that social media exists, now that, you know, it's a lot easier to have your own label and get your music out there, make the best music that you can afford to make. Don't settle for shitty recordings.
Yep.
Get a day job, save some money, find, you know, go out and find the best musicians that you can work with. Get lessons if you need to get lessons. Spend your money on things that are going to have you improving your craft. The number of singers out there that I hear or that contact me and say, oh, you know, I want you to listen to my stuff. I think that I could be really great. I've never taken a singing lesson before, but I've got an amazing voice, blah, blah, blah. And you listen to them and sure, you know, they've got the foundation for a really great voice, but you can hear that they're not trained. Go and get trained. This is, there are way too many people out there that have the chops and that have the training and are still struggling. So if you don't have the chops and you don't have the training, you don't have a chance. You have to keep working at your craft, but figure out your business as well. This is a tough industry, and don't delude yourself into thinking that this is all about sex, drugs and rock and roll. If you are spending any of your time, if you're spending most of your time on sex, drugs and rock and roll, you're not going to have a future in this industry.
Yeah. So where do you see yourself in 5 years? I know you've been planning.
Huh? I've been planning. it'll be an international brand by then.
Yep.
5 years, massive, massive things. There'll be, you know, Music Street Jam will be at the festival level by then. The Dream Angel brand will be huge by then. And there'll be at least one book out, if not two.
Yep.
And we'll be up to two albums after this one that's coming out, and hopefully we'll be on the charts by then.
Yeah. So why don't we hear your new single now?
That would be awesome.
So tell us about what the new single means for you. What's it all about?
This song was one of the last songs that was written for the album. We Jump is about that moment when you are terrified and excited all at the same time about what's going to come. And so you just say, fuck it.
Yep.
I'm just going to stand there and I'm going to breathe in everything I trust about myself, and I'm going to just jump and go and jump into the night, which is the unknown, and enjoy it. And so here it is. This is We Jump. I hope you all enjoy it and really like it.
So I hope you enjoyed the new single that's been out, and you picked an awesome day to launch that, the 11th, the 11th, 11.
Yes.
Even the Americans couldn't get that one wrong.
Be nice, I'm kind of an honorary American.
Is that why you came up with that date?
No, 11-11-11 was the date I chose because I'm big on the number one.
Yeah.
And I wanted it to be the start of the public journey for this album, to start on as many ones as possible. And it was it's a day where there was a lot of global energy being contributed with regards to focus of the date. And so it's a date that I wanted that album, because it's such a positive song. It's such an exciting, happy song. It's the first happy song that I've released.
Yeah. So it's been out a couple of weeks. Any feedback?
Yeah, people are loving it. The thing that is really satisfying for me is that people who don't even like trance or electronica can still listen to this song obsessively because it's still so me.
Yeah.
So they're not deterred. I'm not losing my original fan base from I'm only growing fans.
Yeah.
Which is great.
I'm sure there would be some people who have sort of questioned, who like the old stuff, maybe not like the new stuff as much, maybe. Have you had that?
We've had a few people who've said, I don't know that I want to listen to the new stuff because it's all, you know, it's not my kind of music. But then when they have listened to it, they've all been surprised. We get some people that say, it's not my genre, but I really like what you've done.
Yeah.
You know? We've had a really great idea from one fan, actually, that said, could you release it as an acoustic album? So that might be in the works.
Yeah. Do you still find yourself playing an instrument every now and again just to, like, de-stress, relax?
Oh, I don't have much time to relax.
Yeah, I can imagine.
If I'm doing music, I'm doing music. The only time I do music is for love.
Yeah.
And I don't do music outside of that. So if I feel inspired to play or to sing or do anything like that, I do it above and beyond everything else. My piano's in LA at the moment. So, you know, Henry, that's his name, is, if I'm going to be staying here for the next 12 months, I need to fly over to LA to get him. And I'm missing him a lot.
Yeah.
So it's the idea that if I do want to do any music, I just sit somewhere and sing and create the band in my head. I do a lot of that. That's fun for me.
Yeah.
If I want to have fun, my downtime is spent watching things like quantum physics lectures.
Yeah.
That's fun for me.
And finally, Miss Lee, what is your obsession with peanut butter?
Oh, no, it's Smooth.
Oh, no, is it? Oh, no, it is too.
Oh, my God, Smooth peanut butter. Yes, it's true. I have an obsession with peanut butter. Thank you.
Can you have Smooth?
Yeah, I can have Smooth. Thank you very much.
In case you didn't see what I did there, folks, I've just given Lee a jar of peanut butter.
Yeah. This is the second jar of peanut butter I've got from you.
It is. And the first one was gone before you left the venue.
Yeah, right?
You went and got a spoon and...
and started sharing. I have a... I don't even know where it came from. It just started, my obsession with peanut butter, and it hasn't stopped. I'm a vegetarian, so it's a great source of protein for me. And I typically just eat it by the spoonful, like tablespoon, not teaspoon. But, you know, going to the movies with a jar of peanut butter is one of my favourite ways to check out from society.
Yeah.
So, I love it.
So enjoy.
Thank you. Very exciting stuff. I love when you get presents at interviews. Best kind of present a girl could get if you
peanut
ask
butter.
Me. Yeah, right. Thank you.
No, that's all right. Because I noticed even in your email signature...
Yeah, it's peace, love and peanut butter.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's... and peace, love and peanut butter is all about... and, you know, insert anything you want where peanut butter is. But it's all about peace, love and happiness.
Yeah.
And peanut butter makes me extremely happy.
Now, this is going to sound like a really stupid question. I'm going to ask it anyway. Is peanut butter in the States the same as peanut butter in Australia?
Nothing like it.
Nothing like it?
Nothing like it. There's such a greater availability of different types of peanut butter in LA. And the coolest part about it is there's lots of different types of organic peanut butter, which is just peanuts. Whereas you don't get a lot of that here.
Yeah.
And I'm almost tempted to start my brand. But, you know, that's in the cards as well.
So tell the listeners, how can we find you on the interweb?
head to my website, www.leesafar.com, and you can find me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is leesafar, or on Facebook at facebook.com/leesafarmusic.
So we'll put links in the show notes, Lee. It's awesome. Been an absolute pleasure.
Likewise,
it's been
mate.
Fun.
Thank you very much, and thanks everyone for listening.
Good night, Interweb, from Darlinghurst/King's Cross/wherever
Sorry,
we
girl,
are.
Slash Potts Point.
Now go get that spoon.